And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this week, a lot of stuff that's election-related has come to the fore. But sometimes you wonder, who needs elections? And who's interested in elections? Because a lot of the stuff, the election stuff that came to the fore this week was all about how to suppress participation in elections. And other stuff that's come to the fore is people campaigning in elections with one big lie after another big lie, or one racist comment on top of one grifter's comment, where the whole notion of elections begins to be like a stench in your nose, if this is all that it's all about. And Pennsylvania, I wouldn't say it's the epicenter of it, but because Texas, I think, is the epicenter of it. But it looks like Pennsylvania, especially the senatorial race in the Republican side, bidding fair to be right up there as a scene of some of the most horrible campaigning for this election cycle. Have you noticed this?
Yeah, I mean, it goes to both the carrying out of elections, and then it filters down to who's running for election. And it's sort of like a variation of Grisham's Law. You know, Grisham's Law says bad money will drive out good money. Bad politics is driving out good politics, and they're driving out good people. We had the Pennsylvania Supreme Court finalize a map for legislative districts. And what we've had is, and I mentioned it a number of weeks ago in Pennsylvania, both for the House and the Senate, that the atmosphere has gotten so toxic that a lot of people are leaving. People who have been in politics for a long time understand the system. And, we've seen that locally. Luzerne County, there's four state legislators that are going to be replaced in this election, plus
four,
the state.
Four out of how many?
Six. Not all of them have the full county. Some of them have parts of the county, but most of them have had. Jerry Mullery from down in the Drums area announced retirement earlier. Mike Carroll from the Avoca area, who's got part of Lackawanna County. He was in Democratic leadership. Tara Tuhill, who was also from southern part of Luzerne County, already secured herself a judgeship, so she's out. And this week, Karen Bobeck, who's sort of the back mountain area of Luzerne County, said she, and into Wyoming County and up into that area, former school teacher, said she's not going to run for re-election.
So four out of six.
Four out of six. Eddie Day Pashinsky is still there, a former school teacher. He's in Wilkes-Barre, Nanticoke area. And we have the young fellow from over in Kingston, a Republican. He's staying. But, some of the ones that are running for statewide office have left the state Senate. Of course, State Senator Johnny Dechek got his seat got eliminated. He was first the state in the state House and a couple terms of state Senate. And he moved from the Democratic Party to an independent and started caucusing with the Republicans. So when they wanted to redistrict and cut a seat out, he's the one. And so he's finally out of the legislature. Mario Scovello from Monroe County, conservative state senator, he decided at the last minute not to run for re-election. He named someone he's going to support, Rosemary Brown from Wyoming County. She's a state house, so her seat's now going to be vacant. Marty Flynn's state house seat is going to be vacant in Lackawanna County. He became a state senator. His successor only is an interim. So that's a lot of change. But
Nationwide, a survey was done nationwide, and it turned out that survey showed that more than 33% of the leadership of state legislature bodies are retiring in this, and that's in the nation as a whole.
Yeah. Now, in Pennsylvania, we have two state senators, Jake Corman and Doug Mastriano, who are in leadership. They're giving up their seats to run for governor. So they're both going to be out of the state legislature. Their leadership is out, and across the state, there's others likewise. So we're going to have to see what's happening.
On the other hand, who is stepping up to run for these seats? I mean, it seems to me that there's plenty of Republicans running. There's not plenty of Democrats who step up.
Right. There's three congressional districts in Pennsylvania. Even with the new map that the Supreme Court had, there's three districts in Pennsylvania where congressional districts where the Democrats have put no candidates up.
So you have a situation where the Pennsylvania Republican Party is getting more and more Trumpist, more and more racist, more and more white nationalist. And the party that most people look to oppose that, the Democrats, are absent.
Yeah. And some of these are districts that are highly rural, and the Democrat really doesn't have a chance.
So what?
But the issue, that's exactly right. If you don't have a Democrat on the ticket, you're not going to bring out Democratic voters.
Right.
And one of the things that I've noticed is that the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, is running a campaign where he's trying to appeal to these rural voters. He's been going everywhere in the state, and he's been saying, look, I'm the candidate of the forgotten, which was really what Donald Trump and the Republicans were playing on, which what J.D. Vance wrote about in Hillbilly Elegy, that the elites have abandoned you, and even though the elite's policies are much better for these people, but culturally they say they've abandoned you, they don't understand you, they look down on you. And Fetterman's out there saying, no, I'm a Democrat, and I'm here to help you, and I know what you're feeling. kind of interestingly, his primary opponent, Connor Lamb, who's seen more of the traditional Democratic type that's gotten elected statewide over the years, the Bob Casey type and whatever, he got the endorsement of the Philadelphia Democratic Committee, and Philadelphia being the largest Democratic constituency. It's kind of interesting. They didn't go for Fetterman. I think they felt that they don't have as much control over Fetterman, but whatever. But they also rejected their local candidate for Senate, Malcolm Kenyatta, who I think is just an also-ran, and he's hoping just to squeeze through if Fetterman and Connor Lamb split the vote very closely.
My impression is that the Philadelphia Democratic Committee is very strongly influenced by the Philadelphia Building Trades Unions.
Yeah, you're right.
I was a member of a building trades union for 20 years in New York. Those are not the most radical working class leaders.
No. Well, and I think you were with me a few years ago when we were talking, when they had the Democratic Committee, State Committee met here in Scranton. We were at the hotel where they met at, and we were talking to one of the trade leaders.
Yeah, guy from the guy who headed the Carpenters.
The Carpenters.
My union. My union.
Yeah, you were talking to him about that, and what he said was, leadership is on one side, but he said our members are often on the other side. They don't get it. They're much more conservative than we are. And he said it's very hard to explain to them that what their true interests are. I've heard this about portions.
It's hard to explain to them, but you know what makes it harder? If you don't try.
Right. Exactly. And I heard this a number of years ago, even among the teachers. When I forget who was that won, it might have been Tom Corbett when he won, that like 40% of the teachers voted Republican. Now, despite them having a strong union and what have you. Now, of course, now the teachers union and the state unions, their interests have now emerged. Some big news this week. In the state Senate primary race among the Republican candidates. And the two most prominent names, Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz, and Dave McCormick, have been going at it, a hammer and tong. Both of them are outsiders from the state. And both of them have been, you know, running as far to the right and as Trumpist as they could go. But they've also been attacking each other. They're spending, the spending now in that race is over $35 million. We still have 2 months to go.
And that's both, basically just those two guys.
Basically,
there are three or four or five other candidates, and their spending doesn't even get into it.
No, no. But what happened this week with the McCormick is he's a hedge fund man. He was a hedge fund guy.
He was the head of the largest hedge fund in the world.
And the hedge fund was in charge of the Pennsylvania State Employee Retirement System.
Right.
PSERS, which has been embroiled in a scandal about how they've spent their money. But this is a different dimension. What they found out was that their investments and their investment strategy had among the poorest results in the nation and the highest fees. So while Dave McCormick was getting rich and his firm was getting rich off the Pennsylvania retirement system and not making returns to the retirees, that's something that I think if he wins the primary, if he doesn't win the primary, that's going to be a factor because there's a lot of state employee retirees and the retirees vote. Let's face it. They're the demographic of older voters. And if you can get to them and say, this guy cheated you.
And by the way, it's worth looking at the actual numbers.
Yeah.
McCormick's firm charged the state pension fund, the teachers' pension fund, and was paid by them $500 million. That's a lot of dollars.
Yeah.
At the same time, the results that they produced were below what would have been produced if nobody had managed the fund. If they had just bought an index fund and done nothing, the fund would have made more money than the high-powered approach of these well-paid, you know, I got to say, gamblers.
Yeah.
And what's even worse is that although the pension fund, that the amount of the pension fund that McCormick's firm managed was not the whole fund, the real danger to the whole pension fund was that McCormick's firm convinced the trustees of the fund that their approach was the right approach to take because it would minimize losses if the market went down. And so the fund insisted that whoever managed their money would follow the approach of McCormick's group. And the result was losses. Then when the market went down, they went down more than the market went down. The McCormick fund was completely wrong in their technical approach. They were incompetent. All these people who say hire a businessman because they know how to run business, these guys are professional gamblers who lost at the thing that they claimed that they were the experts at.
Well, they know how to run a business that helps themselves.
Yeah, that's what they are. It's called grifter.
Yes. Yeah. It's
but in the meanwhile, the average teacher, as a result of this loss, and this was quoted in the Philadelphia Inquirer, is having to come up with $30 a week out of their after-tax money to make up for the pension contributions that McCormick's group lost. $30 a week from a working class person.
Yeah. Now, this doesn't always play, but I'll give you an example. If you remember in the 2020 election when the state treasurer's office was up, Joe Torsella, he had on state money, he had taken money away from these hedge funds and had it invested in index funds where there was no fees or very little fees. And he still lost the election for re-election. But that's something that, it's more generalized. This one you can target more because, you know, it wasn't the voters in general. These are the state employee retirees. And if you can get to them, they're going to come out. But on the other hand, we're going to have a classic race between people's economic interests versus these social interests. And as you told me before, Mehmet Oz is being attacked now for being a Muslim.
Yeah, by McCormick. As soon as this point was made that McCormick is a grifter, that he lost money doing the thing he claimed he was the expert at, his response was, look who's charging me with this, a Muslim.
Yeah, go below the belt.
Yeah. And, of course, you expect that from McCormick because who's McCormick's big advisor? Stephen Miller, ace racist, the chief racist in charge of the immigration policy for Trump, who McCormick recruited to his campaign.
Yeah, McCormick's got a bunch of ex-Trumpers. Now, of course, Oz had another self-inflicted wound this week when he came out, and it turns out that he has dual citizenship. He was born here in America to Turkish parents, but he maintained his Turkish citizenship by that virtue and actually went and served in the Turkish army. And the issue.
But do you know why
up,
he did that? It's interesting. He did that because he wanted to maintain his mother's insurance policy in Turkey, which is better than any insurance policy she could have gotten in America. And she has Alzheimer's. That's some story that the Turks have a better social insurance plan than the United States.
As if Oz couldn't afford to insure his mother.
Well, I understand that, but that's an interesting point, right?
How many millions is he spending on the campaign that he could have been paying for his mother's?
Well, only so far 15 to 20.
Yeah. But, you know, first he came out and he said, well, I'll give up my security clearances. In other words, I won't ask for security clearance because I'm a dual citizen. And then when that didn't work, he said, well, if you elect me, I'll give up my dual citizenship.
Right.
Which is, someone said, well, yeah, I remember Donald Trump saying, if you elect me, I'll show you my taxes.
Right.
So they're just going after one another, and it's poisoning the well for
But what
for
is
everybody.
Really is bringing into the state is open racist campaigning.
Which is going on all over the country. I mean, we have that in Ohio where there's an open Senate race. Josh Mandel and J.D. Vance, J.D. Vance being supported by Peter Thiel in his race. And
but he's running third.
He's running third. He's kind of flopped.
Yeah, I mean, his brand of reactionary crap has been outdone on the Republican side by the two guys ahead of him, of whom Mandel is right up there.
Right.
In support of Christian nationalism. Mandel's Jewish.
Yes. But Mandel's been there saying there should be no separation of church and state, which appeals to that crowd. And, you know, of course, this is an underlying theme that I've talked about for a long time, that it animates the right. This animated people who were involved in the insurrection. We found out this week that Jenny Thomas finally owned up to the fact that she was at the rally on January 6th. She's the wife of Supreme Court Justice, who was the one vote against turning over records to the January 6th committee. And the issue is whether or not she raised any money for this insurrection or the folks involved in the insurrection. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, the real story with Jenny Thomas and the insurrection is that the people who were involved in the thing said that she played a critical role acting as the negotiator between warring factions in the coalition that were involved in this coup. And she denied that. She said, no, she didn't do that. But if she did do that, that showed that she was a key leadership person in the attempted overthrow of the election.
Well, and these people, you know, they're looking for a theocracy.
They are.
As long as it's their theocracy.
That's right. And that gets you back to Fetterman, who's, you know, makes this very interesting point that despite the fact that the Democrats and progressive forces seem to be outnumbered in the rural areas, you can't abandon the rural areas. And now, that may seem quixotic, but look at the numbers.
Right.
I'll take my county. I know my county pretty well. In my county, you've got a 2-to-1 registration advantage by the Republicans. The 65 or 66% of the registered voters are registered Republican. 36 more or less percent are registered Democratic, small percentage independent. I ran a campaign up in our county. It was a peculiar campaign because we ran it as a nonpartisan campaign. We issued a platform, and we had candidates behind that platform in both the Republican primary and in the Democratic primary. We got 40% of the Republican primary vote for that campaign. Now, that means if you translate, and we got elected, if you translate that, you know, in other words, you may have 2/3 against you, but you don't need again 2/3 to win the vote. If you have the progressive forces as a block, and you peel off 20% of the wavering voters who tend to vote Republican, you're going to win. That's not an impossible thing to do. With adequate money, with adequate forces that the money can support, with a long-term approach, you can do it. Fetterman's onto something.
Yeah. Yeah, and his ad says, I won't abandon you. He said, I've been to places that have been abandoned, and I'm working for them.
Yeah.
So, now, talking about abandonment, you showed me this week that down in Texas, we talked about this last week, how many of the absentee votes were rejected. And in Harris County at Houston, it was a huge number. It was about almost a quarter of the voters. Across the state now, it seems to have been about 13%, which is still a large number.
In elections where the majority comes into less than 1% wins the election, if 13% are excluded, you've tipped the election. You've rigged the election.
But the other thing is with election workers, and there are places in Texas where they could not get Democrats to be like the Democratic judge of elections, so to speak. And in the primary, there was a sign out there that said, sorry, no Democratic voting today, because they had nobody to take the votes.
And it's all due to the Texas election law that was just passed and is being enforced in this election for the first time, where the publicity went to the fact that they were restricting mail-in ballots, and they did. But another part of that same law, more dangerous even, and speaking directly to what you're talking about now, it made criminal so-called attempts to influence the elections by telling people, if they ask you, how do I fill out this paper, and you're the election judge, and you show them how to fill out the paper, that could be construed as a felony for which you could get 5 years in prison. Now, who would like to subject himself to a trial over deciding whether or not you were improperly influencing a person's vote who asked you, where do I sign my name on this piece of paper? That's why people don't want to register to be judges of elections. That's why it was mainly Democrats who didn't register to be judges of elections, because they know they're the ones who are going to be scrutinized. And why open yourself up to a charge, which even if you're totally innocent, you still have to pay to defend yourself, and it can go on for several years.
Yep. And again, this is all over the country, they're trying to do this. And this is partly Steve Bannon's idea of, we want to control things from the grassroots.
And it works.
And it works. It works.
Yeah.
So we have to see.
But, last week I mentioned to you that I wanted to talk a little bit about what's called the independent legislature doctrine, because, and it goes along with this, because this is a move really by the Federalist Society, the Association of Reactionary Lawyers, who dominate the federal judiciary because Trump appointed so many of them to be judges. And five of them sit on the United States Supreme Court at this point. This says that deciding election law is only in the hands of the legislature, and can't – what the legislature does – state legislature can't be undone or declared unconstitutional by the governors or by the court system, not the federal court system, not the state court system. And that's the way the Constitution is written. And that's how it has to be. And of course, if you put the unchecked control of the electoral system in the hands of the gerrymandered state legislatures that we have, which are completely bought and controlled by the biggest corporate interests state by state, it's a guarantee that the vaunted American democracy will exist in form, but there'll be no content to it, right? You'll have what the Hungarians have.
Exactly.
You have democratic autocracy, so to speak.
Yeah, Poland, same thing.
Exactly. I mean, it's a model. It's a real model.
Yeah.
Hong Kong, it's a real model. So And the way they do this is this thing that they call the independent legislative doctrine, saying that the legislature is independent. And Alito says, yeah, we really have to pay attention to this, it's because the Constitution's words are blah. And he quotes the Constitution's words. Well, that doctrine, of course, now has been studied by legal scholars. And whoever looks at it points out that the two main lines of argument for it, one is that, well, that's the way it was when the founders wrote it. That's the way it was in the 19th century. Well, that turned out to be a total lie. That's not what the founders did. If it's important what the founders wanted, an independent legislature is not what the founders wanted, and it's not what they thought they did. And the next thing they say is, well, that's how it was in the 19th century. And the answer to that is, if you look at the 19th century in detail, you discover never was that what the 19th century practice was. It was completely opposite to that. It's a total lie about the history of the 19th century. So that's one thing. The other thing to remember is, when the people who came together to form the Constitution did come together, it was because they were concerned with the Articles of Confederation. They really came together to reform the Articles of Confederation. And they threw them out and wrote the Constitution. Why? Because the states were too powerful in the Articles of Confederation. They wanted a national government. That's the point of the Constitution. So the argument that these right-wingers make is that a group of people who came together to weaken the power of the states actually wrote something that strengthens the power of the states. It's preposterous on its face, and it's historically not true. Nonetheless, the majority of the Supreme Court believes it. You know, I don't know if they believe it, but they're proposing to vote for it, because this is the strength of the Koch brothers, Federalist Society, Christian nationalist, Trumpist
agenda,
project. And this is where their political strength lies, in these gerrymandered state legislatures.
So by the way,
Fetterman is saying you got to get into the rural areas long term and change them. That's key for the country as a whole.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned the Koch brothers and what they've been funding. Of course, I've talked about them for years. Was that they're refusing to cease operations in Russia? Of course. And you reminded me that their father started his business under Stalin.
Yeah.
That's the genesis of the Koch brothers' fortune. Well, we see all of the atrocities that are being committed and things like that. So it's a multi-layered approach that the Republican Party has adopted, and their funders have adopted, their anti-democratic funders have adopted, in order to really attack democracy and destroy democracy, and layer by layer by layer. You know, if you can't win the popular vote, we're going to gerrymander so you can't win the popular vote. Or if you win the popular vote, we're going to change who counts the popular vote. Or if we can't win that way, we're going to, figure something else out.
Or just don't have popular votes.
We're just going to have, we're going to decide.
We had that condition in the South for years, right? We had poll taxes that eliminated poor people.
We had to define
the Constitution that eliminated poor people, black people, poor white people.
Well, you had that Wilmington, North Carolina, where they once elected a black a leadership, and the people went in and killed people and drove them out.
They burnt the heart of the town down. Exactly. We're done for this week.
We're done for this week. Stay safe. Welcome to springtime.
Welcome to springtime. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out.